Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. We hope all of you had a wonderful holiday season, and we wish you all a safe and successful new year. Today, we have a special report on how the local Syrian community is celebrating the fall of the Assad regime in their homeland, with comments from Syrian immigrants in El Cajon. Following the death of former President Jimmy Carter at age 100, California nonprofit leaders share remembrances of his efforts with Habitat for Humanity to build homes for poor residents in our state. The San Diego FBI office has issued a request for the public to report threats or suspicious activities after a terror attack in New Orleans' French Quarter and a truck explosion outside of a Trump Hotel in Las Vegas, both on New Year's Day. Lemon Grove's Haitian community is mourning the deaths of two young cousins killed when a vehicle collision struck them while they were crossing the street on New Year's Day, just as they were preparing for their new life in America. From California News Service, we'll have a report on PFAS forever chemicals being found in well water in rural communities. Next, we'll have a health alert from the county warning the public not to consume raw milk products or feed raw milk items to their pets following a state emergency declared by the governor over bird flu. Our region has lost many leaders in 2024. Today, we'll share highlights of their remarkable lives and legacies, including a basketball superstar, an astronaut, a famous architect, a former college president, a prominent philanthropist, a political party chairwoman, a World War II veteran, leaders in business and law enforcement, a community theater co-founder, a newscaster, and a wheelchair dancer. We'll also have news on possible cuts to Medicaid and Cal Food programs, where you can recycle your Christmas tree and other holiday greenery, and why the Humane Society is seeking adoptive homes for a flurry of furry guinea pigs. From California News Service, we'll have a report on losses from drug overdoses. Then, from CalMatters, learn about a new state law to prevent most medical debt from being reported to credit agencies. On Green Scene, hear about environmental awards won by Santee Lakes. We'll also take you on the road to Desert View Tower in Hercumbe Hot Springs, a roadside landmark here in East County. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters.
Hundreds of Syrians from across San Diego County gathered in El Cajon's Kennedy Park on December 21st to celebrate the liberation of their homeland. With the fall of the brutal Bashar Assad regime, Syrian refugees forced to flee for their lives now have hopes of someday returning home. In El Cajon, Syrian men, women, and children celebrated by dancing, sharing food, waving Syrian and American flags, and telling their stories. With the removal of Assad and the fall of his regime, Syrians are now seeing people they know, including family members, being released from the infamous Sadneya prison, a cause for joy after years of despair. Rima Al-Khatib, a volunteer with the Mandel Arab Community Center of San Diego County, told East County Magazine that all Syrians in El Cajon came from Turkey, Egypt, Lebanon, or Jordan. With the removal of Assad, many countries are now saying they may return Syrian refugees back to Syria. Many Syrian refugees here say they want to go back to Syria, but not now. First, they want to see what happens with the new leadership, which holds promise for a new, stable Syria. Others hope to make America their permanent home. Many of the Syrians at the event expressed concern for an uncertain future, asking, quote, what will it be like, unquote. Ali Abdi came as a refugee to El Cajon in 2016 with his wife and four children, aged 4 through 16, after fleeing Syria for Turkey, where he spent 2 years. He and two of his children arrived needing medical care for injuries experienced from bombings from Assad forces. One of his children is now in a wheelchair. A daughter is blind and had lost a kidney from having to drink dirty water while they were fleeing Assad's forces and living as refugees. Abdi said he had to flee Syria because of the war, which claimed 40 members of his family, including 10 cousins on his father's side and 4 from his mother's. His sister's sons, 16 and 17 years old, were imprisoned in Syria, and nobody knows their whereabouts or even if they're still alive. With the news of the regime change in Syria, Abdi says he wants to return to Syria to visit family, but he wants to remain living in the United States, where he says the people are, quote, very welcoming and kind, unquote. Abdi says Assad is a terrible, bad man who has no humanity and no morals. Abdi hopes the new leadership in Syria, led by Ahmed al-Ashara, can rebuild the country. He hopes the U.S. will help to rebuild Syria, both financially and morally. He wants all people to be like, quote, one hand, unquote, one community, and no differences between people. But if al-Shara begins to act in an unjust way, Abdi says he should be removed, just like Assad was. Abdi voiced thanks to the United States, adding, quote, without the U.S., Assad would not have been removed, unquote. Samira al-Khatib was born in Damascus, Syria, and arrived in El Cajon in 2016 after fleeing Syria and having to spend 4.5 years in Jordan. She arrived with her son, his wife, and 3 children. Al-Khatib says that they had to flee Syria because Assad killed her brother, sister, and nephew. Her entire hometown was destroyed, and many of her friends have died in prison. Al-Khatib said that she would like to return to Syria someday, but adds, quote, there is still uncertainty there, maybe in 2 years. They talk about freedoms, but we don't know how it will go and if they'll do what they say, unquote. She reflects. She wants to see the new Syrian government be accepting of all faiths, adding, quote, I hope that they use America as an example. You can practice your religions here and everyone follows the law. We want a Syria for all the people. We don't want racism, unquote. Hiba, who shared only her first name, was born in Syria before violence forced her to flee. Quote, I hope there is no more bombing in Syria, unquote, she says. Quote, I want Syria to stay free because everyone deserves freedom. I want to go back to Syria, unquote. Hiba adds, quote, because I still have aunts and uncles there, unquote. Her brother and 2 sisters also want to go home to Syria, she says, as do many of her friends. Susan Abdulmanli arrived in El Cajon 3 years ago after fleeing Syria for Egypt, where she spent 11 years waiting for her refugee status to process. She fled Syria with her husband and 3 children when the youngest was only 3 months old. Abdulmanli told East County Magazine, quote, we lost a whole lot of family and all of our homes in Syria. I am scared for the children of Syria, unquote. Her brother's son was only 16 when he disappeared 9 years ago. He has not been heard of since, and they are worried that he was martyred, since he wasn't found in the Saadnaya prison. When she heard that Syria was liberated and Assad had fled the country, Abdulmanli says, quote, it was the best news of my life. I was soaring with joy, like I was reborn, unquote. She says she and her family are happy in the U.S., but may return to Syria someday, where she has a sister and 2 brothers. She hopes that her country will emerge better than before and that, quote, becomes the best country it could be, unquote. Sadly, she reflects, quote, all of Syria is wounded by Assad and his regime. Not one family has not been adversely affected by Assad. I hope that Assad is held accountable for what he did in Syria and to all Syrians, unquote. Assad has reportedly fled to Russia, but Abdulmanli wants to see Assad extradited to Syria and prosecuted under Syrian law. Bashar al-Assad has been president of Syria since 2000, following the death of his father. His rule has been marked by an authoritarian regime with significant human rights abuses. In 2011, peaceful protests against his government escalated into a brutal civil war after Assad's forces violently cracked down on demonstrators. Assad reportedly used chemical weapons on his own people and has been accused of war crimes. The war caused an estimated 500,000 deaths, millions of displaced persons, and widespread devastation. Assad's government managed to regain control of most of the country by 2020, largely due to military support from Russia and Iran, but large parts of northern Syria remain under the control of Kurdish forces, opposition groups, or Turkish influence. The U.S. and other Western nations meanwhile backed opposition forces. By 2023, Assad's regime had reasserted its dominance over much of the country. But on November 27, 2024, a coalition of opposition fighters launched a major offensive against pro-government forces. 3 days later, the opposition fighters took Syria's largest city, Aleppo. The world was surprised and stunned when, on December 8, Syria was liberated and Assad went into exile in Russia. The successful offensive was fought by several armed Syrian opposition groups led by a group called Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which means Organization for the Liberation of the Levant, a former al-Qaeda affiliate that split off around the time Syrian civil war began in 2011 after Assad's troops violently suppressed widespread anti-government protests. Hayat Tahrir al-Sham is led by Ahmed al-Shara, formerly known as Abdul Muhammad al-Jilani. The U.S. had placed a $10 million bounty on the Syrian leader, but is set to lift the bounty. The decision follows meetings with U.S. diplomats in Damascus, in which Shara committed to ensuring terrorist groups in Syria do not pose a threat to the U.S. Al-Shara's fledgling new government is making hopeful that Syria will be a member of the global community of nations. Women will play a key role in the new Syria, says the new head of women's affairs, Aisha al-Dibs, who says, quote, "Women from all provinces and ethnicities will help rebuild the war-torn country," unquote. Unlike some Middle Eastern nations where women's rights are suppressed, al-Dibs says that the government is committed to engaging Syrian women in social, cultural, and political institutions and recruiting qualified women in healthcare and education sectors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Tim Taylor.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Former President Jimmy Carter, who passed away at 100 years of age, had a huge impact on the Golden State, far beyond his presidency, according to California nonprofit leaders. Carter and his wife Rosalind volunteered for 4 decades with Habitat for Humanity, helping to build more than 200 homes in California and more than 4,000 nationwide. Aaron Rank, president of Habitat for Humanity Los Angeles, says Carter's selfless example has inspired thousands of people over the years.
And we hear from the homeowners who talk about the impact that had on the trajectory of their life, both to have a stable place to live, but also to have a president who was humble enough to show up and get his hands dirty and really build.
Rank says she'll join a number of families helped by the Carters to pay homage in Washington, D.C. next week when he lies in state at the Capitol Rotunda. Carter's influence is still widely felt as he fought to desegregate schools and founded the Department of Education. He also created the cabinet-level Department of Energy and was the first to put solar panels on the White House. Jimmy Carter was also a leader in civil rights. Jorge Reyes Salinas with Equality California notes Carter was the first chief executive to invite LGBTQ+ people to the White House.
Even stating that Jesus would be accepting of same-sex marriage, which as a Christian at that time it was a huge message for the American people to have those conversations.
Carter was also a major opposition figure condemning the failed Briggs Initiative in 1978, a proposition on the California ballot that would have banned LGBTQ plus people from teaching in public schools. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The FBI in San Diego is asking local residents to be vigilant after terror attacks in New Orleans and Las Vegas, although the FBI and Sheriff's Department both assure that there are no known threats in our region. The public is asked to report suspicious activities or threats to the FBI's San Diego office at 858-320-1800. You can also submit a tip online at tips.fbi.gov or call 1-800-CALL-FBI. A U.S. military veteran drove a pickup truck into a crowd of revelers in New Orleans shortly after 3 a.m. on New Year's Day, killing 14 people and injuring dozens more before he was fatally shot by police officers. Authorities found improvised explosive devices, or IEDs, planted in the area. ABC News reports that an explosion to a hotel has been tied to the driver. The FBI reports that he posted videos declaring support for the terror group ISIS shortly before the attack, which the FBI confirms was an act of terrorism. Later in the day, a U.S. Army Green Beret on leave detonated a rented Tesla filled with explosives and fireworks in front of Trump Tower in Las Vegas. His motive is not yet clear. The medical examiner confirmed that the driver shot himself before his body was burned in the explosion. Both attackers were U.S. citizens. The driver who plowed into the crowd on Bourbon Street in New Orleans has been identified as 42-year-old Shamsad Din Jabbar, who served in Afghanistan before his discharge in 2015 and later worked in real estate in Houston. A recent convert to Islam, he carried an ISIS flag in the rental truck and posted 5 pro-ISIS videos while driving from Houston to New Orleans, citing a war between the believers and the disbelievers, according to the FBI. He swerved around barriers before ramming the crowd, then got out of the car wearing body armor and began shooting at police officers before he was shot and killed by law enforcement officers, according to the New Orleans Police Department. The FBI has reviewed his phone and computer. Deputy Assistant Director of the FBI's Counterintelligence Division, Christopher Rea, said in a news conference, "We do not assess at this point that anyone else is involved in this attack." Surveillance videos showed Jabbar placing IEDs at the scene and in the French Quarter. Authorities found 2 active devices described as pipe bombs containing nails, screws, and tacks in coolers. President Joe Biden says the FBI advised him that a remote detonator was found in the vehicle. Rea has said there is currently no definitive link between the attack in New Orleans and the one in Las Vegas, despite some similarities. Both attackers rented electric vehicles through the Turo app. Although the president-elect Donald Trump has tried to blame the attacks on immigrants, in fact, both attackers were U.S.-born citizens. Both had military experience, including service in Afghanistan and at Fort Bragg, now Fort Liberty, in North Carolina, though no direct connection between the two men has been found, CBS News reports. The Las Vegas attacker has been identified as 33-year-old Matthew Livelsberger, an Army Green Beret trained in special forces to work in counterterrorism. He was awarded 5 Bronze Stars, including 1 for courage under fire, as well as an Army Commendation Medal. He rented the electric Tesla truck in Colorado. Charging station photos show that he was alone in the vehicle. According to the Associated Press, he likely intended a more damaging explosion, but the steel-sided Tesla vehicle absorbed much of the force of explosion from firework mortars packed into the truck. The explosion injured several bystanders but did no damage to the Trump International Hotel, just a few feet away. Livelsberger's charred body has been positively identified via tattoos, and he had several forms of ID in the truck. His motive is not yet known, though tipsters have told law enforcement that he had a fight with his wife over their relationship shortly before renting the truck and loading it up with explosive materials and guns. Although authorities have thus far not found a direct connection between the Las Vegas and New Orleans attackers, they have also not ruled out a link. Spencer Evans, the Las Vegas FBI's special agent in charge, says of the explosion there, "It's not lost on us that it's in front of the Trump building, that it's a Tesla vehicle, but we don't have information at this point that definitively tells us or suggests it was because of this particular ideology." Tesla CEO Elon Musk, the world's richest man, is a major Trump campaign donor and has been recruited by Trump to head up a commission aimed at cutting government inefficiencies. Neither Trump nor Musk were in Las Vegas on the date of the explosion. Here in San Diego, local law enforcement agencies issued a joint press release after the attacks. The local FBI office states, "Protecting the American people from acts of terrorism remains the FBI's number one priority," adding, "Attacks such as the tragic event in New Orleans have a lasting impact not only on the immediate community, but all Americans. The terrorism threats we face are complex and ever-involving, demanding that we all work together to keep our communities safe." The FBI is working with law enforcement partners to share information and disrupt any threats to our community. San Diego County Sheriff Kelly Martinez says, "The tragic events in New Orleans and Las Vegas weigh heavily on our hearts." She voiced sympathies to families affected and gratitude toward first responders who acted swiftly and courageously, adding, "These acts of terror remind us of the vital role community partnerships play in keeping us all safe." The sheriff is a regional coordinator for mutual aid response, working with local, state, federal, and tribal partners to collaborate on training, share intelligence, and harden infrastructure to keep our region safe. The sheriff's department recently added a team of explosives detecting canine dogs, while the sheriff's bomb arson unit working with FBI technicians and other agencies. The sheriff's office also participates in the Joint Terrorism Task Force to proactively address emerging threats. District Attorney Summer Steffen emphasizes, "Keeping San Diego County safe from international or domestic terrorism and other threats of violence is a daily priority, working collaboratively with our law enforcement partners in a coordinated and effective manner." She adds, "We also rely on the community to be the eyes and ears to any potential threat. Several destructive threats have been neutralized due to the prompt reporting by a student, parent, or community member of suspicious activities, including words that threaten harm. Once again, you can report threats or suspicious activity by calling 1-800-FBI or submit a tip online at tips.fbi.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Susan Taylor.
The victims of a fatal pedestrian crash on New Year's Day in Lemon Grove have been identified as Nadia Charles and Junior Joseph Juste. Both were 20 years old. They were cousins who immigrated here from Haiti last year in hopes of a better life in the United States. The cousins were killed when two vehicles collided at the intersection of Buena Vista and Broadway shortly after 11 a.m. on January 1st. The impact sent one of the cars into the path of the victims who were crossing the street. Despite life-saving efforts by paramedics and deputies, both died at the scene. The drivers of the vehicles and a passenger were not injured. Sheriff's investigators say that speed was a factor in the collision. Pastor Johnny Oxeda at the First Haitian Baptist Church in City Heights says both of the young immigrants dreamed to do more, NBC7 reports. The cousins had planned to attend a church workshop led by San Diego Police for new immigrants on Sunday to help them adapt to the new culture in America. Instead, a Sunday church service was held to honor the memories of the two young people. A public memorial is planned for this Wednesday at the intersection where they lost their lives. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. County public health officials are warning San Diegans not to eat or drink raw milk products or give them to their pets because of the heightened risk of bird flu. Because raw milk and raw milk products are not pasteurized, they can contain harmful pathogens, including bird flu or H5N1, as well as bacteria such as Salmonella, E. coli, and Listeria. All of these can cause severe illness, hospitalization, and even death, especially in people who are immunocompromised, the very young, and pregnant women. The health warning extends to pet products containing raw milk. Dogs and cats can get sick if these products contain harmful bacteria or viruses, and several pets have died as a result of bird flu from raw milk pet products. Also, keep your pets away from sick or dead birds outdoors, which may have died from bird flu. Pasteurized milk and other pasteurized dairy products are safe to consume because the heat treatment kills bacteria and other pathogens like the bird flu, but otherwise does not change the product. Even before the emergence of bird flu in California, San Diego County public health epidemiologists have linked other illnesses to raw milk, including in 2023, when a series of Salmonella cases were reported after consuming raw milk product from a producer in Fresno. California Governor Gavin Newsom has declared a state of emergency to strengthen the state's response and preparedness for bird flu. The California Department of Public Health reports 34 confirmed cases statewide in humans, but says the current risk remains low for the public. Bird flu is a highly contagious virus that can sicken or kill birds and other animals. While rare, it can be spread to people when the virus gets in someone's eyes, nose, or mouth, or when it's inhaled. County Public Health Services is monitoring the emergence of bird flu variants in coordination with health partners at the federal and state level. The county also is in communication with local veterinarians and healthcare providers. No cases in humans have been reported in San Diego County. However, human deaths have occurred elsewhere. Those most at risk for bird flu are farm employees exposed to livestock such as dairy cattle, as well as wildlife workers. The county has made personal protective equipment available to eligible farms, wildlife groups, and animal control officers. While the seasonal influenza vaccine does not protect against bird flu, everyone is still encouraged to get vaccinated to reduce the risk of serious illness, according to the County Health Department.
Toxic PFAS, known as forever chemicals, are turning up in wells and water systems in rural areas of the San Joaquin Valley and Central Coast, far from known industrial sources of pollution, according to reporting from KFF Health News. Researchers from UC Berkeley and the nonprofit Community Water Center tested 10 private domestic wells and 10 public water systems this year. Tests showed PFAS and arsenic in a well in Juana Valle's 5-acre farm in San Juan Bautista.
So I was tested after having pain in my legs, burning sensation on my joints. Then I stopped eating what I was eating from the farm, and the levels dropped from really high to a normal level.
Researchers suspect the toxic chemicals could have made their way into Valle's water through nearby agricultural operations, which may have used PFAS-laced fertilizers made from dried sludge from wastewater treatment plants or pesticides containing the compounds. PFAS chemicals are also used in many consumer products, including cookware, cosmetics, and some types of firefighting foam. Claire Pace is a researcher at the University of California, Berkeley, who is examining possible exposure from PFAS-contaminated pesticides.
It's pretty clear from national and state water sampling projects that PFAS is a widespread problem. It's in our food, it's in consumer products, it's in the soil, it's in drinking water, and it's in our bodies. Our hypothesis is that PFAS is more widespread in rural areas than regulatory agencies are currently aware of.
A federally funded report linked PFAS to cancer, decreased response to vaccines, and low birth weight. The EPA announced new limits on PFAS in drinking water in April. It is unclear if the standards will be enforced by the incoming Trump administration. This story is based on original reporting by Hannah Norman for KFF Health News. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Our region lost civic leaders and luminaries this year, including a basketball superstar, an astronaut, a famous architect, a retired sheriff's deputy and Chamber of Commerce chairman, a World War veteran, a noted philanthropist, a former college president, a newscaster, a political party chairwoman, and a community theater co-founder, among others. They are gone but not forgotten, leaving lasting legacies and memories. Here are highlights of the remarkable lives led by these leaders lost in 2024. NBA Hall of Famer and former Helix High School superstar Bill Walton died May 27th at age 71 after a prolonged battle with cancer. One of the greatest basketball players of all time, Walton later became an award-winning sportscaster. But he also won hearts and minds in the La Mesa community through his philanthropic efforts, including raising millions of dollars to build the Bill Walton Gymnasium at the Boys and Girls Club in La Mesa, where he was mentored in his youth. Visionary artist and internationally acclaimed architect James Hubble passed away on May 17th at age 92, surrounded by family members. Hubble founded the Jan Lael Foundation to inspire future generations of budding artists, architects, and builders. Hubble designed hundreds of public and private artworks locally and around the world. Internationally, he headed up efforts to create a series of international peace parks at locations rimming the Pacific Ocean. He also began a 30-year volunteer project to build Colegio La Esperanza, an elementary school embedded with mosaics to bring hope, education, and beauty to students east of Tijuana, Mexico. Joan Jacobs, San Diego community leader, made transformational philanthropic gifts to many local arts organizations. She died of heart failure in May at age 91. She was the wife of Qualcomm founder Irwin Jacobs and the grandmother of Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs. Irwin and Joan Jacobs' philanthropic gifts included large bequests to the San Diego Symphony, La Jolla Playhouse, Museum of Contemporary Art San Diego, the Salk Institute, and the Jacobs School of Engineering at UCSD. She was awarded the Carnegie Medal of Philanthropy and remembered by San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria for her profound impact on San Diego. Bob Schultz, a singer and actor who co-founded the Off-Broadway Live Musical Theater in Santee, died of a heart attack on August 30th. He proudly served his country in the U.S. Army from 1984 to 1987 and dedicated over 30 years to U.S. Customs and Border Protection before his retirement. He was passionate about keeping his country safe and prosperous, serving both at home and abroad. He also served on the worship service team at Sunrise Church in Santee. Astronaut William Anders, who took the famous Earthrise photo of our planet during the historic Apollo 8 mission, died on June 8th at age 90 when the small plane he was piloting crashed near Seattle. Anders said of his role in man's first mission to the moon, "We came all this way to explore the moon, and the most important thing is that we discovered the Earth." Anders graduated from Grossmont High School in 1951 and from the U.S. Naval Academy at Annapolis. He joined the Navy and later the Air Force, flying fighter jets, becoming a test pilot, and then a NASA astronaut. After NASA, he served in government roles, including chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, then entered the business world with positions at General Electric, Textron, and General Dynamics, where he ultimately became chairman and CEO. Stephen Weber, who led San Diego State University as president for 15 years, leaves a legacy of academic excellence and service. Born on March 17, 1942, he also left this world on St. Patrick's Day, March 17, 2024. During his tenure, San Diego State University led the nation in improved graduation rates, Weber also raised academic standards, diversified the campus, and pioneered programs to help veterans and low-income, first-generation college students enter SDSU. He chaired the NCAA Executive Committee, AVID, and the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. After his diagnosis with ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease, he published a collection of essays and continued to support charities as well as his beloved Aztec sports teams throughout his life. John Fisteri, a news broadcaster of the East County Magazine radio show, died July 26th at age 89 of complications from Parkinson's disease. A longtime La Mesa resident, Fisteri served in the U.S. Navy and then had a 40-year career in engineering, ending with his retirement from Solar Turbines, Incorporated. He served as president of the Rotary Club in La Mesa, founded the East County Physics Meetup, co-founded the Prostate Cancer Research and Education Foundation, and published a software program to help prostate cancer survivors track results. He also served as president of San Diego Festival Chorus, San Diego, leaving a lasting impact on our community. A respected deputy in the San Diego County Sheriff's Crime Prevention Unit for more than a dozen years, Jim Wybolt died on December 7th at age 67. Wybolt was also a civic and business community leader, serving as founding chairman of the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce, chair of the city's Parking Commission, and chair of the La Mesa Centennial Projects, Events, and Calendar Committee. He was also active in the La Mesa Village Merchants Association. A graduate of Grossmont High School in 1975, he later earned a degree in criminal justice from National University in San Diego and owned several businesses. Ever civic-minded, he also ran for La Mesa mayor, city council, and treasurer. Becca Taylor, chair of the San Diego County Democratic Party, died in July of injuries sustained in a motorcycle accident in Utah. She served in the U.S. Navy, where she volunteered as an advocate for sexual assault victims. She founded and served as first chair of the Veterans Caucus for California Young Democrats in 2014. She also worked with serving seniors on the board of directors of the Ocean Beach Town Council and as secretary of the Metro West Area Caucus. In addition, she was a volunteer manager with the San Diego Rapid Response Network, helping asylum seekers. Adelbert Connor, a World War II veteran who participated in many significant battles as part of the Greatest Generation, passed away on November 10th at age 103. In the U.S. Army, he participated in multiple beach landings in the East Indies and Japan. Rising to the rank of sergeant, he returned home in 1946 with immense pride in his service to his country. He obtained a teaching degree from San Diego State University and later worked for the Money Mutual of New York Insurance Agency. He resided in Allied Gardens for 70 years. Rob Deason, a retired teacher in the San Diego Unified School District and husband of Deerhorn Valley Antler publisher Kim Hamilton, died January 2nd after a long illness. Deason studied liberal arts at California Western University. A talented woodworker, he also studied woodworking and electronics at San Diego State University. He married Hamilton in 1987. His articles and photos on backcountry life appeared in the Deerhorn Valley Antler. After losing their barn in the Harris wildfire in 2007, Deason built a new art and music studio, Casa Calibri, that has doubled as a meeting place for the Deerhorn Valley Community Association and a pickup site for CSA farm boxes. Kati Aguilar, a trailblazer in the HVAC industry, died January 29th in a car crash in El Cajon, leaving behind a wife and three children. She attained national recognition in business among the top 1% of HVAC technicians in the U.S. and inspired women to attain success in the field. She made a national impact, inspiring women by proving that women can achieve success in the male-dominated trade. She was known for devotion to her family, her sense of humor, enthusiasm, as a Dodgers fan, and for helping others in need. Isaac Paul Whiting died on December 8th at age 43 following chronic asthma complications after contracting COVID in 2020. Whiting grew up in East County, graduated from Helix High. He later attended Grossmont College until disability sidelined his educational ambitions. Confined to a wheelchair due to spina bifida, he began wheelchair dancing in his mid-20s. He eventually danced with singer Jason Mraz in the Wheelchair Dancers Organization. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
As President-elect Donald Trump prepares to take office, federal health programs affecting 85 million low-income Americans, including more than 12 million in California, may face cuts to reduce inflation and debt. As of 2024, California has the largest state Medicaid program in the U.S. Programs such as Straight Medicaid, CHIP, and SNAP could be affected by fiscal tightening in the upcoming year. Myra Alvarez is head of the Children's Partnership in California. She told an ethnic media panel that Medicaid cuts would deeply impact families.
It's these public programs that are core to helping families meet the day-to-day needs of raising healthy kids. These have been bipartisan programs that have helped our families thrive.
Political experts say Congress is expected to act swiftly on its agenda next year, with key actions likely starting in January before the presidential inauguration. Medicaid is funded by both the federal government and individual states, but each state runs its own program. Joan Elker, who also participated on the panel, is a research professor at Georgetown University and head of the Center for Children and Families. She says cuts to the program will have widespread effect.
Medicaid accounts for about 56% of all federal money that is flowing to states is coming in through Medicaid. If we do see big cuts to Medicaid, that will affect all areas of states' budget.
Key proposals in the upcoming administration include setting federal funding caps, reducing federal match rates, and eliminating mandatory benefits such as nursing home care. Medicaid advocates are also concerned that plans to replace benefits with private insurance vouchers could offer less coverage. For the California News Service, I'm Crystal Blair. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the San Diego County Humane Society. The Humane Society is calling on community members to ring in the new year by welcoming a small pet into their home. The organization is trying to find adoptive homes for 135 guinea pigs in their care at campuses in El Cajon, Escondido, San Diego, and Oceanside. In mid-December, the Humane Society's law enforcement team rescued 51 guinea pigs from an RV home in Ocean Beach after the owner passed away. At shelters, these pets were given medical evaluations and care and found to be in good health. Now, these little animals are ready for their second chance, along with the dozens of guinea pigs who were already available for adoption. These small, furry friends are adoptable as singles or in bonded pairs, and they've been spayed or neutered to prevent unintentional litters. Walk-in adoptions are open Tuesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at San Diego Humane Society campuses in El Cajon, Escondido, Oceanside, and San Diego. And you can visit sdhumane.org/adopt to view all of the adoptable animals.
Groups working to fight hunger in California are calling on Governor Gavin Newsom to protect funding for the Cal Food Program in his initial budget proposal, which comes out January 10th. Cal Food allows food banks to purchase things that are not often donated, such as eggs, milk, produce, meat, and cheese from California farmers. Becky Silva with the California Association of Food Banks says Cal Food has enjoyed a temporary boost for the past 3 years, so unless the line item is made permanent, funding levels could see a major drop next summer at the end of the fiscal year.
So that means that it'll go from the current approximately $62 million per year down to about $8 million. And so obviously food banks are incredibly worried about what that will mean.
She says the food banks are asking for a permanent allocation of $60 million a year in order to avoid big cuts in service. The association estimates that a 1% drop in hunger prevents $600 million in healthcare costs while supporting farmers and food producers in the Golden State. The association represents 41 food banks that served about 6 million people per month in 2023, which is a 20% increase year over year. Silva says hunger levels jumped during the COVID pandemic and have not come back down.
Food insecurity rates are not decreasing. Even though a lot of people think of the pandemic as being over, the economic impacts are still being felt by people all over the state.
Once the governor releases his blueprint, the legislature will start negotiations. They have until June 15th to produce a final budget. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Did you know that a Christmas tree can take hundreds of years to decompose in a landfill due to lack of oxygen? San Diego residents can help prevent waste and save landfill space by transforming their old Christmas trees into nutrient-rich compost or mulch. The County of San Diego and I Love a Clean San Diego make it easy for residents to recycle real Christmas trees by compiling a list of drop-off locations and instructions for curbside pickup. The countywide recycling resource is wastefreesd.org. When Christmas trees are recycled, they embark on a new journey that benefits the environment and the community. Through processes like mulching or composting, trees are broken down into organic matter that enriches soil with essential nutrients. This process not only reduces the amount of waste sent to landfills, but also plays a crucial role in lowering greenhouse gas emissions, since the decomposing organic waste in landfills produces methane, a potent contributor to climate change. According to the EPA, organic materials like Christmas trees, food, and yard waste are the number one material sent to landfills, composing two-thirds of the solid waste stream. By giving Christmas trees a second life through recycling, county residents can contribute to a sustainable celebration of the holidays. Here are some Christmas tree recycling tips. Do not flock or purchase flocked trees. Fake snow or flock contains chemicals that interfere with the composting process. If you use tinsel, it has to be completely removed and placed in the trash before a tree can be recycled. Also remove all ornaments, garlands, lights, nails, tree bags, and tree stands. For areas where curbside tree recycling is available, trees taller than 4 feet need to be cut in half. Reuse or donate artificial trees that are in good condition to a charity. Don't let real trees sit around too long after the holidays, since they can dry out and be fire hazards. Natural wreaths and similar decorations can also be recycled with trees. Many local waste haulers offer curbside pickup of trees and wreaths, in addition to dozens of community drop-off sites. You can visit wastefreesd.org again for that list of drop-off locations and communities with curbside pickup. For East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
A new study finds that more than 1.4 million children in the U.S., including many in California, have lost a family member to overdose, emphasizing the collateral damage of the drug epidemic. The study focused on children younger than 18, as of 2019, who had lost one or more parents, siblings, grandparents, aunts or uncles, or cousins to overdose. USC Dornsife sociology professor Emily Smith Greenaway is a co-author on the report.
We know drug overdose are really traumatizing deaths to undergo. There's probably a lot of hardship leading up to the death. Those deaths are probably very confusing for young kids to process.
Researchers found that most kids who lose family members to drug overdose are between ages 10 and 18. But data show that the reach of this program is getting dramatically worse because kids younger than 10 are experiencing drug overdoses in their family at younger ages relative to their slightly older peers. A 2024 study in the Journal of the American Medical Association Psychiatry looked at children who have lost parents to overdose and found the highest rates among non-Hispanic American Indian and Alaska Native families. Smith Greenaway says there is currently no system in place to identify, track, or monitor children affected by overdose and then offer them specialized counseling.
We need, clearer supports for identifying this population, but then also providing them the support to ensure that there's not a cyclical trauma here that replicates across generations.
Help is out there for parents or caregivers in California looking after a child who is coping with loss due to overdose. Some options include the website of the nonprofit ILUNA or Ronnie's House of Hope, based in Palm Desert. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report from CalMatters on a new law to help Californians facing medical debt. Every day, people across the country skip medical care because of cost. Those who do seek medical help may end up with a balance they can't pay off. That debt can hurt people's credit scores, resulting in long-term financial burdens. Starting January 1st, a new state law will prohibit health providers and debt collectors from reporting medical debt information to credit agencies. That means that unpaid medical bills should no longer show up on people's credit reports, which consumer advocacy groups say is a boon for patients with debt. Here's why. While the law will not forgive someone's debt by keeping it off credit reports, it might provide some reassurance that a hospital stay or a trip to urgent care won't later affect their credit standing. Lower credit scores usually result in higher interest rates and make it harder for people to qualify for a home rental, a car loan, or even employment. During legislative hearings, the law's author, Senator Monique Limon, a Democrat from Santa Barbara, contended that because people don't choose to have a medical emergency or illness, this type of debt should not count against them. Supporters also argue that medical debt is more prone to inaccuracies because of billing mistakes by health providers and insurers. The main three credit bureaus, TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian, stopped reporting medical debt under $500 in 2023, but most people with medical debt owe far more than that. The national average for medical balance is $3,100, according to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. In California, an estimated 38% of residents carry some type of medical debt. That figure climbs to more than half for low-income residents, according to the California Healthcare Foundation. One key caveat of the new law is that patients can only take advantage of this law if the debt is owed directly to a medical provider or a collection agency, but not when the debt is charged on a medical credit card or a general credit card. This new law follows similar ones enacted in a handful of other states, including New York and Colorado. It also mirrors a proposal put forth by the Biden administration to do the same nationwide. However, with the Trump administration taking over in January, it is unclear whether the federal proposal will go anywhere. Limon's office explained that under the law, patients have the right to sue a debt collector or provider who reports a medical debt to a credit bureau. Consumers may also choose to file a complaint with the state's Department of Financial Protection and Innovation, which is authority over debt collectors. Consumers can also file a complaint with the California Attorney General's office. Cal Matters is a public interest journalism venture committed to explaining how California's state capital works and why it matters.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Santee Lakes Recreation Preserve has received two national awards from the outdoor hospitality industry, Large Park of the Year for Parks and Campgrounds and the Planet Green Park of the Year. This marks the fifth year that Santee Lakes has received Park of the Year and the ninth year for the Planet Green Park of the Year awards. Corey Kading, Park and Rec Director at Santee Lakes, says this national recognition highlights our team's commitment to enhancing the lives of our guests through exceptional camping and recreation experiences. Once a gravel mine, Santee Lakes was created to clean Santee's wastewater and send the treated water from a water recycling facility to other parts of Santee for landscape irrigation. Now a series of seven lakes, Santee Lakes provides camping, fishing, boating, special events, picnic venues, and other recreation opportunities. The park welcomes over 650,000 guests every year. The Planet Green Award recognizes campgrounds that practice green initiatives. Some of the projects making Santee Lakes green include recycled water flowing through Santee Lakes to create a recreation area that diverts 2 million gallons of sewage every day from entering the Pacific Ocean, a solar RV storage project generating 50% of the campground's energy, and a recycling program that has also been successful in diverting 10 tons of waste from entering the local landfill annually. By separating green waste, another 50 tons is diverted each year. Plus the urban forestry program, with over 2,100 trees and 53 varieties, absorbs 97 pounds of carbon every year. You can learn more by visiting SanteeLakes.com.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hakumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hakumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hakumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
The San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance has won top honors at the 136th Annual Rose Parade, with a float commemorating the historic arrival of giant pandas. For the second consecutive year, the Alliance received the sweepstakes trophy given for most beautiful entry, encompassing float design, floral presentation, and entertainment. The San Diego Zoo's float, called Friendship Across the Earth, transported viewers across Asia's ecosystems and honored Yun Chuan and Xing Bao, the first giant pandas to enter the U.S. in 21 years. The pandas made their public debut at the San Diego Zoo on August 8th, designated California Panda Day by Governor Gavin Newsom. The 2025 Pasadena Tournament of Roses theme, Best Day Ever, celebrated life's best moments. Paul Baribault, President and Chief Executive Officer of the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, says receiving the award for the second time this year is momentous, adding, in 2024, we had the once-in-a-lifetime experience of watching as Yun Chuan and Xing Bao brought the world together. They represent what is truly possible when we come together with a shared purpose, commitment, and trust in one another, he concluded. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.